This is the Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland. The Student Hour is powered by AM 1450 KBPS, the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Brought to you by Portland Radio Project 99.1 FM, your nonprofit community radio station, online at prp.fm, and brought to you by KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM and KBOO.fm. Also brought to you by X-Ray KXRY 107.1 FM and 91.1 FM, online at xray.fm. This is the Student Hour.
And welcome to a brand new episode of the Student Hour. My name is Jacob Patterson. I'm the KBPS radio broadcasting teacher. Usually, you have to go out to the press conference. Very rarely does the press conference come to you. But that's exactly what happened for our KBPS radio students recently when we signed up to participate in the student reporter press conference with the Interstate Bridge Replacement Program organizers. As you may know, they are getting ready to replace the interstate bridge over the Columbia River that connects Portland to Vancouver. And recently, KBPS broadcasting students got to put on their reporter hats and participate in a real press conference about the bridge replacement. And we got to ask questions. How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? Are they going to put a toll on the new bridge? And if so, how much is that toll going to cost? All of this pretty important for people driving around Portland on the most used freeway and most used bridge that connects Portland to Vancouver. So this first segment is the conversation that we had live on KBPS right after we participated in the press conference. And this includes our senior chief of staff, Josiah Wester, and KBPS junior producers and reporters, Rosa and Connor. Thanks for listening, and we hope this information is useful for you.
You are listening to AM 1450 KBPS Portland, the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Stream us live online at kbps.am. It is 1:12 on your Tuesday afternoon. And we have a little bit of breaking news from the KBPS News Center. Our KBPS senior class and some juniors just got to participate in a live student press conference on the Interstate Bridge Replacement Project. And so our students just sat through an hour-long press conference with officials who are working on the I-5 Interstate Bridge Replacement Project. And we just learned a lot of interesting information that is important for Portland residents, Vancouver residents, and pretty much anybody with a car or a vehicle driving around town listening to KBPS right now. And so with us in studio is KBPS Chief of Staff Josiah.
Hello.
And a couple of our rock stars from the junior class, Connor and Razor.
Hello there.
My name is Jacob. I'm the teacher. And team, while all of this information is really fresh in our minds, let's share with our listeners, first off, what we learned from this press conference. What were the questions we asked, and what did we learn from the officials in the press conference?
We should probably also tell our listeners what the project is actually about.
Yeah.
If you don't know, they are planning to replace the I-5, or at least take some of the tension off of the I-5 by building a bridge which can go to Vancouver, and it'll also connect some other areas as well. And hopefully it'll open up even more job opportunities.
And ultimately, I mean, the reason why is because the I-5 corridor from the Moda Center up to the I-5 bridge in Vancouver is one of the most congested, bottlenecked spots in all of Portland. It is some of the most heaviest traffic, and is some of the narrowest freeway space in all of Portland. So everyone's sitting in a traffic jam on I-5 during weekday rush hour knows this, and knows this very well. And so they're working on replacing the bridge, improving transportation, not just for vehicle traffic, but also for public transportation. And it's coming with a small cost, aka potential tolls for drivers. And so we've got all the latest info right now. Josiah, what you've got a good fact sheet kind of lined up for us. What have you learned and what's in your notes from today?
Well, I only really put on here the most engaging topics, such as when it's planned to start and end. But another thing which I didn't write here, actually, is that apparently 70% of all traveling starts and ends at just the I-5, which is already a big problem. They're planned to start construction in 2026, and they plan to finish building it in 2036. We're probably expecting like a bit more than that. The cost estimate is $5 to $7.5 billion. Ooh,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that is a ton of money.
That's what we call a chunk of change.
In the interview, they said that their biggest obstacles are technical, political, and societal expectations. And then the hardest thing out of all of those is finding a solution that fits them. Mm-hmm. And then they're also going to put a toll on the 205 bridge to attract more attention to the interstate bridge. Money's going to labor, materials, and equipment.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Connor. Yep. Connor from the junior class. Connor, welcome, and tell us about the questions you asked and what you learned from the press conference.
I asked the one question about how they were going to add a toll to the I-5 bridge to help pay for it, of course. But I wanted to know, considering that some people might see a toll on the I-5 bridge and want to take the 205 bridge because they wanted to avoid the toll, if they were going to add a toll to the 205 bridge as well, in order to stop people from going out of their way around to the 205 bridge to avoid the toll. And I learned a few interesting facts that they told me when I asked that question. Some of them weren't exactly what I asked, but they're interesting still. I think they said that they're not in charge of tolls on the 205 bridge. They think that there might be a toll that's going to start taking effect there anyway, coming up in years to come, and so they might not need to. They also said that the I-5, like you said before, is like one of the most traveled places to get from Portland to Vancouver. It's really direct, right there. Mm-hmm. So they said that people want to use that anyway. So it's just an incentive in itself. It's directness, and even though it's one of the most, it's so congested, there's actually more people taking the 205 bridge already because it gets so congested. So even though it's more direct, there's more people taking going out of their way to go around on the 205 way because it the traffic is so bad that you just can't.
Yeah,
and you effectively.
And Connor, you asked a great question. Knowing that they're considering putting a toll on the new I-5 bridge, and that would divert more traffic over to 205, are they considering putting a toll on 205? And they said, yes, they are considering tolling a portion of 205 to combat all of that. So very interesting information and very important information that your listeners want to know and drivers around Portland want to know. That's why we're talking about it. Let's invite Razor into the conversation, another junior who asked a question during the press conference. Razor, tell us the question you asked and what did you learn from the answers?
Well, hello, listeners. The question I had asked was how long the bridge is going to take for construction, which Josiah had answered earlier, because I know bridges can take a while for construction, considering how bridges are old and big. Yeah.
And they said 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, and the project timeline is about 10 years from start to finish. Imagine that. They start building the new bridge when you're in second grade, and it's finished by the time you graduate as a senior in high school.
Oh, my goodness. That's just too long. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's a possibility to build it faster, but like, I don't know how I could stay interested in a project that long, to be honest with you.
That makes total sense. Like, I'll be doing like a school project and I'll lose interest within an hour. So that's crazy how someone could have that much like motivation to have a project that'll last for 10 years.
I can't even remember when I was in second grade. No. And I'm not even a senior yet.
Now, what if they paid you? What if you were being paid to work on this project? Would you care more?
I mean, yeah.
Absolutely. There you go.
One question that I should have asked but didn't is if they have excess money left over, where's that going to go?
Ooh, that is a very good question.
Does that just go to the government, or what happens?
I would chime in and say, basically, there's kind of this unspoken rule that if you don't use it, you lose it. And so typically what we see in these municipality government spending situations is they find a way to spend every penny. Because if they don't, like, for example, on a reoccurring budget, an annual budget, if you don't spend all the money that you're given and you have a surplus left over, well, next year they'll come around and say, well, you only used 75% of your budget last year. So I think this year we're going to give you 75% and see if you can make do with that. And in those cases, that's why you'll see they'll find a way to spend the money.
Yeah.
Is that especially if it's not their money to spend, if it's taxpayer money.
Mm. Is that where you get things like the Oregon kicker, where you, it's like taxpayers get some of their money back if the government doesn't spend all of it?
Yeah, exactly. And this year, actually, we're looking at a historic kicker kickback. But was there anything else before we wrap up this talk break and get into a whole bunch of, we got a whole bunch of car songs and driving songs and transportation songs queued up for you. And we would love KBPS listeners to engage in this conversation as well. If you have any thoughts, comments, give us a call on the KBPS TalkBack line, 503-916-5101. That's 503-916-5101. You can find the phone number on the KBPS website. What are your thoughts on the I-5 bridge replacement project? Would you pay a toll to drive to Vancouver? Or would that stop you from visiting things like the Vancouver waterfront or the cool theaters and things that they have over there?
Not to mention if some people work in Oregon and live in Vancouver, that could really cut into their budget for just living.
Yeah.
Or even people who need to travel to meet family on the other side.
Yes, that is very true. I have, I work at Dollar Tree, and my main general manager lives in Vancouver and has to have a 45-minute drive every day just to get to work. And so with the construction of this bridge, I'm sure it's definitely going to take a toll on her. And so, you know, no pun intended. So I hope things just go well for the people that, you know, do have jobs outside of the area they live, such as Vancouver to Oregon, or vice versa. So, yeah.
I would add one more last thing here. It's kind of the elephant in the room that hasn't been really brought up yet. And the reason why there's so much traffic on these freeways in the afternoons and drive times is because, and it all comes back to money, it's about the taxes. So yes. You know that there is, there's different taxes in Oregon State and different taxes in Washington State. Right. And a lot of people try to play this, you know, play it so that they have to pay as little as possible, you know, because the cost of living is going up and up and some people just can't afford it. So some people live in Washington State to avoid Oregon taxes and come drive down to Oregon and have jobs here and buy their things in Oregon because there's no sales tax in Oregon. And then they go back and live in Washington State. And it's all about the money at the end of the day. And if you start tolling, the only way to drive back and forth between these two states, it starts to change the money factor.
I assume that would really throw a wrench in a lot of people's economic plans.
The other exactly. question is, like, how much is it going to cost? Like, how much is the toll going to be?
There's a lot of money going towards the whole bridge in general. And with the fact that there's already a lot of money, like, $4 billion, they said.
Yeah, they have four billion.
Yeah, $4 billion
right
down
yeah.
already.
Yep, with $4 billion already going towards this bridge, when there's other needs, you know, out there.
Yeah, they're estimating that it'll cost like 5 to 7.5, but they're aiming more like right in the middle at 6.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money to spend on a bridge.
Yeah. Right. It raises the question, like we were talking about, the fact that there's a toll. The toll could affect people's plan for, like, driving across for work, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that could decrease, that could decrease the amount of traffic in of itself. And then maybe if you're going to tax the bridge or toll the bridge, it might make it so that you have this brand new giant bridge that you built for like so many cars, and then it's like, oh, well, we have less traffic on this new bridge than we did on the old bridge because now we're tolling people and no one wants to drive across it. So that's another thing they could consider.
Again, let's do something that we call a reset. And what that is for our listeners who are just joining us, we're talking about a press conference that we just participated in, the Interstate Bridge Replacement Project, just held a press conference for local media and journalism students, and the KBPS AM 1450 senior class and juniors participated in this press conference. We learned information about the replacement of the I-5 bridge, the timeline, the cost, the potential tolls, and students actively participated in that, asked questions, learned a lot of valuable information, and we are just sharing some of that information, what we just learned moments ago live on the air on KBPS. And this is why radio still is alive, because of the immediacy, how quickly we can get the information out to our listeners. We don't have to take the time to publish it on a website or make a video out of it. It's the immediacy and the intimacy of radio broadcasting still alive and thriving today.
There is one more thing that I just wanted to bring up about the bridge. It is going to be a more public and direct route to Vancouver, which means that we're hoping to get a MAX line. Right? Isn't that what they said?
Yes. That's the one of the big updates. Obviously, they're going to try to expand the number of lanes to reduce the traffic jam, and they're going to add public transportation. And we did a quick poll in the classroom during the conference, and I just asked everyone, raise your hand if you think that we should have a light rail MAX train that goes to Vancouver. And almost every single student in the class raised their hand.
Yeah, pretty much immediately.
Yes.
And so that is really important to future drivers, future transportation of Portland, having public transportation and TriMet access over the I-5 bridge is very important to our students at KBPS.
I hope there is a good, like, walk and bike lane across there as well, because I have ridden my bike across the bridge like two or three times. Oof.
Scary.
It is not a fun place to ride your bike across. It's like 3 feet wide, and then yeah.
Scary.
I mean, I wasn't scared that I was going to fall, but it was definitely not.
Sorry, Connor. I can again invite our KBPS listeners into the conversation to share their thoughts, and we're happy to play your calls on the air. If you have any thoughts about the I-5 bridge replacement project, potential tolls, cost, would you be willing to pay a toll to go over the I-5 bridge in 10 or 15 years from now? How much could that impact you? Give us a call, 503-916-5101. Or if you just happen to have a really cool driving song or song about bridges, give us a call, 503-916-5101.
Hello, listeners of the Student Hour. My name is James, and I'm here interviewing an employee from Greensavers. What is your name, and what is your job?
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on. My name is Forrest Zachary, and I work for Greensavers as a home performance consultant.
That's cool, and I'm glad I got you here. So what does a home performance consultant do?
Well, it's a really cool job, in my opinion. I love what I do. I get to go into people's homes and really look around at what has been neglected to be done to make it an efficient building. And then offer solutions to bring that building up into the modern age. So a lot of what we do is air sealing, insulation, windows, and then we also offer mechanical solutions like heat pumps and water heaters, really a whole suite of services in order to get people's homes modernized and more efficient, save them money on their bills as well.
That's cool. So, like, what's your favorite part of the job?
I think my favorite part of the job is just all the nice people I get to go meet. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I've been calling myself a coziness professional because we're basically making people's homes more cozy. So that feels really good. But yeah, there's a lot of things to be excited and happy about with this position. You know, I get to feel really good about what I'm doing for the environment and the planet. I get to do it in a way that, both myself and my customers enjoy. At the end of the day, it's not just my clients who are winning and doing their part to contribute to our goals of zero carbon emissions. But since we're a B Corp, we also roll all of our profits back into the company so that we can continue to do this for more and more homes in the area. So that feels really cool.
Cool. So what made you decide to go down this path? And if you couldn't go down this path, what would you do instead?
Well, it's kind of interesting. For the last 5 years before I got this position, I was selling solar panels. And so my kind of background was I went back to school and I got a 2-year mechanical engineering technology degree at Portland Community College. That prepared me to get into the world of semiconductors. And I spent about 4 years at Lam Research and decided that factory life was not where I really wanted to be. And so I got a job selling solar panels. That was fantastic. I mean, my goals have been to spread technology that helps humanity and the planet. Since I went back to school, that's kind of what I set as a personal goal for myself. And then, you know, found myself doing that some years later. So that was a pretty exciting revelation. With solar, which is really cool, it was a neat gig. But solar is really kind of the last thing that you should tackle when you're thinking about your home and its performance. And now I'm getting to get at the front end of things, looking at the first places to make your home more efficient, such as attic insulation, rim joist insulation, and a lot of air sealing. Those are probably your most bang for your buck things you can do for a home in order to get it more efficient.
How easy would you say it would be to hire a home energy consultant like yourself to get assistance?
I think it's very easy. You just need to contact a company who does it. That said, there are two levels of consultation that we provide. The first is what I do, which is a home energy consultation. I go in, I take a look, I assess what the home needs, and I provide pricing and explanation for what those things are. You can also get what's called a home energy audit, which is performed by a licensed auditor. And it's kind of neat. You can actually get $150 back on your taxes if you go that route. And then you get something that looks a lot like a home inspection report, like when you do a home sale, except it's all focused on energy and what the potential causes and measures that you can take in order to get your home looking better or more efficient would be. So it's super easy to do. I think that the charge for an energy audit is something like $350 and you get $150 back. And the way we also apply that towards somebody's project if they end up moving forward with us. So it's kind of free and you get an extra $150 back if you choose to do an energy audit and you move forward with some work. I would say that the consultation is usually $150. It also gets applied to your project if you move forward. All it takes is a phone call to us here at Greensavers, and we'll get you on the schedule.
Cool. But would you say there's enough home energy consultants? Or is like
not at all. A lot of the drive in this industry. I mean, there's a great drive from our wonderful population here, a lot of folks who care about the environment and just want to do the right thing. But on the federal level, they're giving money away, and some of the money that they're giving away for this home efficiency stuff is tied to outcomes of your project. So having somebody who can actually go in, who's an auditor, who can go in and measure a baseline, and then have the work performed and then do another, usually a blower door test is what we use in order to analyze a building tightness, to go back in and show that the appropriate or the expected tightness has been achieved through the measures that we've taken. So in order to get those federal dollars, that needs to be done by a home energy auditor. I think that one of the best credentials you can get if you're looking to get into this field is BPI certification. That's issued by the Building Performance Institute. And yeah, I think it takes, you know, about 6 months to do the learning and a test. And so it's a pretty low barrier for entry as far as education goes. Yeah, I would encourage people to get into the industry. It's going to be expanding rapidly as we move closer and closer towards our climate goals and timelines. And yeah, there's just going to be a ton of work in this industry coming up. So I'd encourage anybody who's interested in buildings and how they operate and perform to look into it.
That's great to hear. But do you have anything else you'd like to add?
It's good. It's good to, you know, have some experience around buildings, I'd say, but not necessary. You can also learn on the job as you go. Other than that, I think what goes a long way is also just kind of working on your client interfacing skills, you know, learning how to talk to people about their homes and about money in a non-threatening way. A lot of my job actually is helping people how to figure out how they're going to pay for it, you know, whether they want to use their own cash or finance it. And so getting comfortable with talking about money with people is a really important skill to have in this line of work also.
Oh, and also, would you say that enough people know about energy home consultants? Because I didn't know about it before I met you.
Sure. You know, I think that it's kind of a under recognized industry in a lot of ways. Greensavers is actually the first home performance company in the state of Oregon. We've been around for about 17 years. We've seen a number of other companies come and go by chasing whatever current incentive program is out there, trying to pivot into this space. But we've maintained a really consistent growth and trajectory because we just want to do great work in the right way. And we've built a pretty impeccable reputation over the years. So yeah, it's becoming more and more known. I think that for a long time, you know, before 1970s, when we had the oil crisis, like home performance wasn't even like really considered. That's when they started like looking at what insulation does and air sealing and all that sort of stuff. And so our bread and butter is really homes that are, you know, between 1890 and 1980 are kind of like what we do. So we do a lot of retrofits, and it's a marketplace that there's a lot of room in. There's a lot of demand for it. And I mean, we can honestly barely keep up with the calls coming in the door in order to do this work. So yeah, we're going to have to be hiring another consultant or two here pretty soon.
Ooh, so what's the oldest house you've worked on?
Personally, you know, I've only been with the company about 8 months at this point. I think my oldest house was an 1898 home.
Wow, that is old. But I think
Yeah, 1898. That's correct. Yeah, it is old. And Portland has some of these old houses. You do get into some tricky things sometimes with historic buildings and how they need to be preserved. But we're really good at what we do. We've done a lot of those projects also, and we're just careful and take our time in order to do it right.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm gonna have to wrap this up now. My name is James from AM 1450 KBPS. Thank you for listening to the Student Hours on KBPS, PRP, KBOO, and X-Ray. I will see you all next week. So, if people want to request you or anyone else from Greensavers, how can they do that?
Oh, yeah, it's real easy. There's two ways. You can either go on our website, which is just greensavers.com, to get some more information there, or you can give our Portland office a call at 503-223-8767. That's 503-223-8767.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
If you'd like to support the Student Hour, please consider donating to our program at kbps.am and donating to our sponsors, Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like the Student Hour stay on the air. For more info, go to prp.fm and click on the big red heart, KBOO Community Radio. Support KBOO online at kboo.fm and X-Ray. Support X-Ray online at xray.fm. Thanks for listening.
Good day, listeners, and thank you for listening to the Student Hour. My name is Zip, the Chief of Music, and today I'll be doing a review of the song Beautiful Things by Benson Boone. It was released January 18th and produced by Boone with Jack LaFrance and Evan Blair. Let's take a listen.
For a while there it was rough, but lately I've been doing better than the last four cold Decembers I recall. And I see my family every month. I found a girl my parents love. She'll come and stay the night, and I think I might have it all. And I thank God every day for the girl he sent my way. But I know the things he gives me, he can take away. And I hold you every night, and that's a feeling I wanna get used to. But there's no man as terrified as the man who stands to lose you. Oh, I hope I don't lose you. Please stay. I want you, I need you, oh God, don't take these beautiful things that I've got. Please stay. I want you, I need you, oh God, don't take these beautiful things that I've got. I found my mind, I'm feeling sane. It's been a while, but I'm finding my faith. If everything's good and it's great, why do I sit and wait till it's gone? Oh, I tell you, I know I've got enough. I've got peace and I've got love. But I'm up at night thinking I just might lose it all. You, I need you, oh God. I need these beautiful things that I've got.
Beautiful Things by Benson Boone emerges as a breathtaking anthem, capturing the essence of emotional depth and the beauty found in life's simplicity. Boone's vocal delivery is both powerful and delicate, weaving through the melody with a vulnerability that's palpable. The song's arrangement is masterful, combining subtle instrumentation with sweeping crescendos that echo the highs and lows of human experience. Lyrically, Beautiful Things is a poignant reminder of the significance of cherishing moments and finding splendor in the mundane. Boone's ability to convey profound feelings within the confines of a 3-minute track is nothing short of remarkable, making Beautiful Things not just a song, but a resonant expression that lingers long after the last notes fade. This is Zip, the Chief of Music from AM 1450 KBPS Portland, and thank you for listening to The Student Hour on KBPS, X-Ray, KBOO, and PRP.
Hello, I'm Josiah on KBPS 1450 with the Student Hour here with Chilihoa Susk, and he has been very, very excited to talk about the topic for today. We're going to be talking about the top three game right now, Helldivers 2.
I'm really excited to talk about this because I think it's such a fantastic game. Helldivers 2, if you guys haven't heard, is like a brand new released game. That's like, what, $40 right now?
Yeah, it's $40.
Yeah, and it's an entire global effort.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Everybody works together to liberate planets against bugs and robots.
The automatrons.
Yeah, gotta fight for freedom and liberty.
And democracy. Don't forget democracy.
Oh, yeah, don't forget democracy.
So this all takes place in, like, a futuristic setting, of course, on a place called Super Earth, which the idea is that, like, everyone on Earth just came together and were like, you know what, why don't we just have peace? So they just, like, technologically advanced and blah, 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 whatever futuristic stuff happens. And then they're like, wait, there's more planets besides this one? If they can't have democracy, we'll give them democracy. And that is, like, the entire game is you going to different planets and just give them democracy. And I think that is, like, an insane thing to think about.
You're liberating.
You're liberating.
Absolutely. I think it's a terrific game. It's kind of interesting, though, that Xbox, PC, and PlayStation are all sort of, like, coming together.
No Xbox.
No Xbox. No.
Which I think is personally insane, because what are the two exclusives that Xbox is well known for? Gears of War and Halo. What do those have? Aliens and bugs. What do? We exterminate them.
Exactly.
Xbox is like those people are known for liberating and for being the whole American message.
They're the fighters.
They are the fighters. And I'm an Xbox player. And I wholeheartedly am, like, waiting for Helldivers 2 to drop in the shop.
Oh, hell yeah.
But Steam players and PS5 players are eating it up right now, because they are ruthlessly fighting against them. Like, right now, there's a whole... Actually, the developers said that what you guys do in the game will develop the lore of the game. So there's been jokes about Malvolon Creek being, like, the Vietnam War of the game. And now we have an actual speech from a voice actor saying that the trees are speaking binary, and I think that is, like, such a funny thing to think about.
Good.
Yeah, because it's, like, such a game break. It's a game breaker.
Yeah.
It's not even a AAA studio doing this, and it's doing so much better. Apparently, it's, like, rivaling Fortnite and Apex right now, which are both games that have been lasted around since 2018, 2019.
Oh, yeah. But what I was going to say earlier is it's the fact that even PC and PlayStation players are literally requesting for this game to be added to Xbox. Like, everybody wants all of this.
Everybody wants the Helldiver 2 draft to be sent out. Everyone wants boots on the ground to destroy us.
We need more
menaces.
Men. We need to fight.
I'm getting, like, videos of, like, promotional stuff of, like, join the Helldivers, take down the automatrons. I'm getting, like, guides to the game, too.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even play it yet. I'm, like, hyped. I think this, like... I'm not hyped for a lot of things, Josiah. You know me. I'm not hyped for a lot of games. But this game is the one game I'm like, oh my god, I have to play this.
I feel exactly the same. I'm just trying to save up enough money to actually buy the game, because I don't have $40. But oh my god, it's a terrific game. My friends keep talking about it. I need to get it, man.
Yeah, I mean, the mechanics are really nice. Apparently, actually, Helldivers 1 had a mechanic where you could actually upgrade your guns. Hopefully, they'll bring that along, because that does seem pretty cool. I actually want to look more into Helldivers 1 to see what we can expect in Helldivers 2.
Absolutely.
But, like, AP rounds for the automatrons, flamethrowers for the bugs. There's actually, they even make, like, this is the most satirical, like, American game I can think of, because it's like, take some liberty, and or, like, the Eagle Drop. There's, like, a thing called the Eagle Drop, which is just, like, a big bombardment of missiles, and I think that is just, like, I'm excited. This is like, if you guys know Warhammer 40K, it's like this, but like more child friendly.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. There's too many things to talk about. I know they keep updating the game, like, or giving updates on how the Liberation Front is going.
Oh, yeah, the Super Earth broadcast. I don't even know if that's run by official account, but I'm going to assume it is, because I think that's the most funniest thing. Like, just today, we were actually watching a couple before we got in here on the studio.
Yeah.
Of, like, the updates and everything. Like, as of right now, people see Nelp and Malvolon Creek. What was the other planet? Like, Moron or something?
Something.
Yeah. And there's also time-based things. So, like, let's say there's bots at A and B. A and B, you have to be taken back in, like, 3 days, or also we will lose that, and then you have to go move on to the next planet.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, like, the bots are, like, taking over, and so are the bugs, and you're trying to, like, keep them from reaching Super Earth. And apparently, from what I heard or what I've seen about Helldivers 1, there's an even more bigger threat out there of, like, aliens and stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's one that hasn't even been in the game yet, but it's gonna. I'm waiting for it. There's going to be an update, and it's going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah. The entire game is going to turn itself on its head. I think, and I'm going to agree with a lot of people, that this game that's not even a AAA studio like made will rival like any game that's going to come out. Call of Duty, whenever another game comes out, that's going to be...
I think this
Apex
game is...
the new season, Fortnite, always going to get shot down because of this game.
I think it's going to be immediately voted Game of the Year. As soon as
people
are
already
over.
Saying it's going to be gaming.
Oh, absolutely.
The fact that the devs are having such a problem, like, hey guys, can you please log off our game so someone else can play?
Like that's the problem they're having right now. Is the
people
problem
won't
with
stop
them
playing?
Yeah, the problem is that there's too many people playing the game. That's their only
Maybe
problem.
Maybe one
so
AAA
far.
Studio game that has had that problem. I can't think of honestly a single one. I mean, yeah.
That's another thing. This isn't even a AAA game. It's for $40.
Yeah,
it's not AAA price.
I mean, there's so many like small companies that make good games, but they don't get enough recognition because of AAA studios.
Exactly.
Like Lethal Company. Remember when that came out?
Oh yeah.
So much better than a lot of things that came out at the time.
Oh, absolutely.
If people felt like that, well, not I want to say Game of the Year, but it's one of the contenders.
It's up there.
But then in, you had a Runaway of Spider-Man 2, which was a really good game. I cannot. Baldur's Gate 3, that was a really good. Yeah, Baldur's Gate 3 was not a AAA studio. But
oh, it wasn't?
It wasn't.
It's a really good game.
But it was a really good game. They actually had complaints like, hey, you probably should have made this game because now it just puts the new standard on us.
What?
Yeah. That's what a lot of people were saying was like, Baldur's Gate 3 was such a good game that we don't know how we can match with that type of perfection, that type of quality.
It feels like the best games that come out are the ones that people aren't expecting, right? There's those ones that people are expecting, and then they
like
get
Power
way
World.
Too...
Yeah, we're saying Power World and Helldivers 2 were two games that no one expected to come out, and yet it's like the most fun they've ever had.
Exactly. As soon as they come out, they're the best games. Baldur's Gate, I don't know if that was like too hyped up. It definitely wasn't so... I didn't hear about it until it came out.
Yeah, I didn't know about the game until, like, I saw, like, a small video of it, and I was like, wow, that is such a cool game.
But then you have other games like Cyberpunk, which had been, like, hyped up for years. And then when it came out, everybody was, like, very...
very disgruntled about it. But then Project Red came out, which was a DLC.
Oh.
Oh, no. I don't remember, but DLC came out, and then an update came out, and, like, the game has changed. It made me want to get it.
Oh,
I did want the game, even with all the bad reviews, because I thought Cyberpunk is a really cool game, but still.
Yeah, either way, they didn't release that quick enough.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a sort of thing going on in the gaming community where if you have a game that you're not expecting to be super good, or you're not expecting for it to even come out, then it's going to be really, really good, and then games that are, like, you're expecting and are hyped, they just end up being really bad.
And I think, okay, so here's my thing with Helldivers 2. Mm-hmm. Love the game. Servers need to change. All games need to have good servers, even if they're AAA studio or not. That's the one thing about it. And what I think AAA studios need to do, because we're seeing the hype up with Helldivers 2 right now. Mm-hmm. Now that's going crazy. I think AAA studios need to, like, push away from some of their games. Like,
yeah.
Call of Duty, I get it. It's an FPS game.
Yeah.
Shooter. I think they need to change up their formula just a bit more. I want to bring back, like, the futuristic stuff. We've been going far too long with, like, all the modern stuff. I think we need to go back to future just for a bit, so we can change it up.
I feel like with a game like Call of Duty, though, that game has just been remade way too many times.
Yeah.
Not original anymore. There's, like, how many Call of Duty games are there?
That is a good question. We have
like
the Modern Warfare series, the Black Ops series. We have Advanced, Infinite, World at War. I'm going to say at like over 10 at this point.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely over 10. I feel like there's like 20 of them.
Yeah. But
Helldivers. Helldivers is new.
Helldivers is new. Nobody actually ever... I don't know if they wanted or actually expected a remake to happen. Not a remake, but like a new game. No one expected a new Helldivers to come out. And I think that's what the main selling point is because no one knew about this game.
I didn't even know about Helldivers 1.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Baldur's Gate 3. No one knew what Baldur's Gate was.
No. And then all of a sudden, like, they make a terrific game, and it's just the best.
Yeah. So, folks, start looking at, like, old games, and that's, like wishing into the universe that it comes out with another one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Be hopeful.
Be hopeful.
All right.
Spill oil.
All right. All right. I've been Josiah on KBPS with the Student Hour.
And I'm Mitchell Osusk with the Student Hour.
Thank you for listening.
Hello, world. My name is Dane, and today we have a special guest, Makai. And we are going to get to the bottom of, well, Makai. Who is he? So, Makai.
Hi. Hello. I'm Makai.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, like I say with every icebreaker that we do every single day of high school forever, my main big things is I'm really interested in scary stories. My pronouns are he, it. I am a goofy, goofy homosexual. And fun fact, I see sound as shapes and colors. That's Ooh. The base of it.
Is there a word for that?
I believe it's synesthesia, though I'm hesitant to actually say that I have synesthesia because, fun fact, synesthesia is often considered synesthesia because of repeating patterns and other such things for the relating input, whilst I don't necessarily have that. So hesitant to call it synesthesia. It is something similar, probably. Sorry.
All right, so I assume... No sorries. I assume you have... some goals for the future. Where do you see yourself in 4 years? So that's like a bit after high school. What do you think is going to happen?
Hopefully I will go straight into the workforce. I'm looking for something either in care, as in care for elders, or maybe child care. Otherwise, I'm hoping for something manual labor-esque. I'm hoping after that, maybe a few years after getting into the workforce, maybe get a teeny tiny apartment, hopefully with a roommate that I don't hate, and just live like that for the rest of my life. Hopefully get a cat. I really like cats.
Really like cats? More than dogs?
I like cats and dogs in different but equal measures. I enjoy cats more because I am more socially connected to them, and also dogs require more space and different types of care. I plan on living in a place very small, so getting a dog without being abusive towards it is not really an option. Wow. I think that question is silly. Both animals are delightful.
That's fair. So do you hold any beliefs that you hold very strongly? Or any core beliefs, I guess is a better way of putting it.
I suppose my big one is just be kind if you're able to. I don't really have a good way of explaining the big ones. They're not really like the classic, like, I don't know. Just be kind. Allow people to grow, but don't... I'm not going to curse. Don't be a doormat. Just be nice if you're able, but don't take abuse, basically. Otherwise, just be nice to animals, I guess.
You said be nice if you're able. What does that mean?
Well, if you're being stabbed, it's kind of hard to sympathize whilst being stabbed with the person stabbing you. I think at that point, you shouldn't try and be kind if you're being stabbed, unless it's some, I don't know, extraneous circumstances in which this is a Magnus Archives reference. Your lover is turning into an Eldritch Abomination and you have to stab him to end the world and hopefully, destroy the Eldritch Abominations trying to kill the world. Will your lover die? Will you die? You don't know, but you're trying. Like that, maybe I could be sympathetic, but if I'm just, I don't know, being mugged, I'm not going to say, oh man, are you having a hard time? Is that why you're stabbing me? I'm going to be, oh God, you stabbed me. Please don't stab me. Oh no, I might even punch them. Basically, if you are able, without compromising yourself or more people, try and be kind, basically.
When did you realize this as something you really held dearly, or like why?
Answer or silly answer?
Deep answer.
Oh, no. If I'm completely honest, I struggle with empathy and understanding that other people feel things, mostly because I have issues feeling things myself.
Relatable.
I will admit, although I'll try to be nice to myself, because that's another thing I care about. You can't be nice to other people if you're stabbing yourself. I was not a very kind child in middle school and freshman year of high school. I got better in freshman year, but I was definitely not the best person, and I didn't like how that made me feel, and I didn't like that I was hurting the people around me, especially people I really cared about. So I tried to fix that, and I realized that one of the easiest ways to fix that is just to genuinely try and think of other people's needs and wants and circumstances when you're able to. And also the whole, you can't be nice if you're being stabbed yourself, kind of difficult, so self-care plus other people care.
How did you realize that you want, like, how did you realize this was a problem and, like, address it?
Well, it's kind of difficult to explain in unexplicit manners, but I suppose it's that as a young child, it's hard to realize that, like, I was a fairly physically violent child. That's not a cool thing to be. And once that was turned on me, bullying is a thing. Wow. We should fix that in schooling. But I was bullied and was also a bully, but I didn't realize I was a bully until I had a very similar person to me bully me. And I realized, oh, that's not cool. I would like to say that was the only factor. It wasn't that simple.
But it was a big factor, a turning point.
Kind of, yeah. Another thing is just having more access to things like the internet and having spaces to, like, figure out that I was kind of struggling with things and, like, having resources to, like, explain the emotions I was feeling, because I wasn't necessarily maliciously violent. I was more like, you know when a really large dog tries to sit on you because they're really excited and they don't realize that they're really large and kind of crushing you? It was kind of like that to a point. So when I had the access to the internet and access to wider ranges of people, I could kind of realize that, okay, first off, when I am excited, I should try not to grab at people because that ranges in, like, violence, and that's not cool. And also with the wide range of the internet, I realized that other people, you know, feel things and that type of jazz. Does that answer the question? Like, off topic?
No, that totally does. That feels like a very profound change, and I was wondering if there is anything that you find really profound and beautiful, a set of things that you find really profound and beautiful in the world, to get to a more lighter topic.
Sorry about that. Busting in here with child violence
and bullying. No, it's great.
But honestly, I find the simple fact of finding things beautiful a really important part of my existence. This is going to get depressing again. Should I continue?
Yes, very much so.
So life is hard. Nobody's not going to say it is, and if they are, they are lying or mildly confused. Life is difficult. Maybe not for you, but for people in general.
I feel like everyone's life is difficult in some ways.
Yeah. But I find it really special and important to try and find value and beauty in everything. Because if you find beauty in everything, unless you are dead, you have something to look forward to. You have something to hope for. Like, again, I'm just a joy to be around. But, like, say the world got really bad here in America and we had a war or something.
Civil war. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a war. And the classic things would be taken away. That type of thing. I would still be able to find beauty in, like, you know, a clover or a pretty sunset or a friend's laugh or, like, eyebrows. There would always be something, so I wouldn't fall into, you know, a despair spiral, that type of thing. And I find that thought process and the fact that the world is a world and exists and is so complex really cool. Please don't include any of this. Please delete all of this. Please interview somebody
else. It's very much not edited. To go on a slight tangent, in a conversation prior, you said there is no such thing as value. And now you're talking about value. And aha, there's the value.
No, I did not say anything. I said that nothing can have value taken away. Everything has intrinsic value.
That's
everything
not what
is
I took
valuable.
Away.
Everything
this
is valuable.
A side tangent.
Every
I'm going
single
back
thing is valuable.
To the actual.
How about you delete that bit and say that you did
no,
not?
No, I'm keeping it in. Yeah, I mean, it's off topic. If I was having
so
an actual
sorry.
Interview to go on air, I would not include
yes,
that.
Yes, no, I wouldn't be talking about this on air.
Fair.
Sorry, listeners. Anyway,
so,
continuing.
You said that in a friend's laugh, you can find beauty. Well, what about not beauty in people's red flags? You know, the red flags. What are the biggest red flags for people? Is it their laughs?
That's a difficult one. I'll admit I have a bit of a hard time after I have become friends with somebody recognizing negative signs. But just in general, I would suppose a red flag that I listen to or notice and take note of very often is how people joke about things. People will say this is kind of silly, but if somebody is, say, making a joke about physical disability and somebody asks them to stop making a joke about physical disability for any reason, say they themselves or a family member has a physical disability, and that person then refuses to stop making the joke and or like says why, it's just a joke, it shows a lack of respect, a lack of like caring about boundaries and stuff, and that's just something I'm not down with. And that expands to just disrespect of boundaries. That's a thing I struggled with, again, with the violence thing. I, first off, didn't realize when my boundaries were being, you know, damaged, but also I didn't realize that that wasn't normal and that I was doing that. So that's another thing. I suppose also just refusing to admit when they are wrong or, like, admitting, quote, but not actually changing. A big thing that I dislike that wouldn't necessarily be a red flag, but just something that bugs me is, like, fake apologies or, like, apologies that not, like, I will admit, I acknowledge that my constantly saying sorry can be read as fake apologies, like, and I need to work on that.
Insincere apologies? Like, yeah, apologizing, like, for a reason that's not being sorry.
Yeah, or, like, saying the sorry but not acting on it, because an apology is supposed to be, say you're in the classic two-person scenario, somebody ate a piece of candy that the other person asked them not to eat, and then the person would say, I'm sorry for eating your piece of candy, but then didn't internalize that and didn't change within themselves, and then the next day they ate that person's taco. I don't know, tacos are good, I guess.
Tacos are good.
I don't actually like tacos.
Well, how many tacos have you had?
A lot. Taco Tuesday.
A lot of types of tacos?
Yeah. Oh, another thing, I love food. I love food. I love food so much. There's like seven foods that There are like seven foods that coffee. I love coffee.
There are seven foods that you like.
Yes, seven foods that I don't like, which are all of the classic American condiments and everything else. I'm just, yes, I will eat it. And it's very funny to me that that is a thing that I do. Yes, but back to red flags.
Seven American condiments?
Seven is a magic number that is not actually seven. It's could be 100. It could be two. Numbers don't exist. I'm very bad at math.
77. It could be 777. My favorite number
is 2022 or 2022 or 12 or 2 or 4 or 22.
That's a lot of number.
Yes.
All right. You have outlined some things you really value, where you want to be, and some things that you really don't like. Who do you strive to be, and why?
I try not to set, like, harsh things, mostly because, not actually going to say that. Mostly because, you know, life can change, things happen. If I were to make, like, a perfect version of me, I guess just more kind, more emotionally intelligent in the things I'm not currently, maybe a bit more good at math, maybe a bit more dedicated to following through with deadlines, that type of thing. But yeah, just a bit more put together version of me with a cat, with multiple cats, with two cats and maybe a hamster. Yes. Also with longer hair, and I want a split tongue piercing. So that is perfect Makai.
Can we repeat that with the sentence starter? I strive to be, like, you're trying to be this?
I strive to be slightly taller, a person with two cats, more emotionally intelligent with a split tongue piercing, maybe longer hair, and a tiny apartment.
All right. Even though this may have seemed like a lot, we've barely begun to scratch the surface. So thank you, Makai, for giving us a sneak peek into the little world of you.
Thank you, Dane, for embarrassing me thoroughly.
You've been listening to The Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland. The Student Hour is produced by AM 1450 KBPS broadcasting students at Benson High School. On air since 1923, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Thanks to our supporters, Portland Radio Project 99.1 FM KPRP LP Portland, your nonprofit community radio station online at prp.fm and KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM and KBOO.fm and X-Ray KXRY 107.1 FM and 91.1 FM online at xray.fm. And thanks to our listeners like you, this concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. Full episodes of the Student Hour are available on our website, kbps.am. That's kbps.am.